Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the old Delta Queen steamboat might soon be back on the Mississippi River, and we have a story about America's only airport runway on a frozen lake.
Question, is Mexico a safe spring break destination, or should you just stay in the States this spring? Ann Banas of Smarter Travel has the answers and a ton of tips to keep you safe anywhere you travel. That's at 3:20.
An exciting new program, Hotel Amazon, debuts on the Travel Channel tomorrow night. At 3:35, Tom talks to one of two friends who star in the show. A fascinating interview about a most intriguing program.
And coming up at 3:45, we'll tell you the seven things that will label you an annoying American tourist. And Mark shares not only some of the acts of kindness he's encountered on the road lately, but he has details on a new study about something that happens often on airplanes and what we can do about it.
It's Sunday afternoon, and you're tuned to the most entertaining radio program in the Sacramento Valley. At least that's what Tom's wife tells him. All aboard with the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man, king of the road.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone. It's another edition of the Travel Guys on a beautiful Sacramento Sunday afternoon. Mark Hoffman from Sports Leisure Vacations to my left. I'm Tom Romano. It's a pleasure to have you there and us here. Mark, I hope you've had yourself a fabulous week. I know we got a great show ahead for our listeners.
We do have a good show. We've got some really great, two really great guests with interviews. Gal talking about travel to Mexico for spring break, and which really a lot of the travel tips that Ann has to share with us are tips that you can use anywhere. So that's a great interview coming up at 3:20. And then we're going to talk to the guy about the new Hotel Amazon. That's kind of cool.
This is a fascinating interview. Ever since I found out I was going to get a chance to chat with Rusty Johnson, I have just been very, very excited about it. I got a chance to preview one of these rare opportunities to see the first episode actually before it airs tomorrow night on the Travel Channel, and it is incredibly intriguing. Both of these guys, they look like actors that maybe you've seen in a movie, but they are not. They're just regular Joes, and their story is amazing. The cinematography that goes into shooting this particular, what's it called, a docu-series.
It's about 6 hours, I think, long, you mentioned.
Yeah, and it, anyway, I won't tell you anymore. You're going to have to listen. It's coming up at 3:35.
And I haven't been much of any place over the last week, but there's a lot of people who haven't been much of any place over the last week. Did you see on Thursday alone, over 20% of the flights in the whole country did not operate on Thursday?
Yeah, everybody's got the weather. They've got the snow. They've got the ice, and Sacramento's got the dry. But I'll tell you, it looks pretty treacherous. I like to fly. My wife only flies through necessity, and I can tell you, and there's probably a lot of people that feel the same way. They see this weather. They watch what happened at LaGuardia, where Delta slides off the runway. It just kind of creeps you out a little
bit.
Yeah,
it does. But then, you know, it's statistically, Tom.
Here it comes.
Statistically, the most dangerous part of your trip is the drive to the airport.
Drive to the airport, yeah.
Your chances of getting hurt in the shower in the morning are probably greater than they are once you get on that airplane. But nonetheless, the folks on that Delta flight were very fortunate the other day. But it also does point out that even when something goes wrong, if you've got professionals in the cockpit and people who know what they're doing, then disaster can be averted. And I think that's the takeaway from all of that, is that could have been a very disastrous situation, and it wasn't. And in part, it wasn't because you had professional people who knew what to do when that tough situation came up. So,
as a professional traveler, and I've got to call you that because this is what you do for a living, advice to those, once again, I know we've covered this before, but it never hurts to go over it again. Advice to those that may be thinking of traveling in areas that may have some bad weather, what you should be thinking about in regards to planning ahead and and what to do when you get to a destination that and you can't get any further.
One thing I would tell folks right away is if you're getting ready, let's say you're scheduled to fly to the East Coast next week and another storm is rolling in and it gets to be Tuesday and you're scheduled to fly on Thursday, you want to go to the airline's website. And there, like on United, there's a in little tiny red type in the middle of the homepage, it says important notices. You want to click on that because that's where you find what are called travel waivers. The other airlines have similar places on their website. You're looking for a travel waiver. That will say is, if you're flying on this date to or from this list of cities, here's what we will do. You can cancel. You can reschedule. Here's what the terms and conditions are and things like that. So generally, the airlines will allow you to rebook your flight a day or two later without any charge. If you decide to go 6 months later, why then they'll give you a credit for your full ticket and you can start over with the new fare. Generally, you have to complete your travel within a year or sometimes within a shorter rebook within a shorter period of time. But most important is to go on the website a couple days before you're going to travel when you're traveling in the winter and look at those important notices. Remember, you might be going to Florida, but if you're passing through Chicago, then that could be your hang-up point. So the weather might be perfect where you're coming from and where you're going to, but it's like when we tell people to line their suitcases to keep their clothes from getting wet because mm-hmm. you never know where your suitcase is going to end up in between, and that's exactly it. So make sure that you consider the airports that you're transferring in, and then also remember that your aircraft, if you're flying, especially if you're flying late in the day, as the day goes on, there's a greater opportunity for your airplane to get someplace that it can't get out of. So it's in the wintertime, you always want to travel early in the day, if at all possible, and you want to consider Saturday if you can, because that is the lightest day of travel any time of the year, but especially in the wintertime.
Amen. That last comment that you made about staying away from those late flights in the day, boy, I have gotten hung up on that more than once, and it usually occurs because wherever I want to go, I want to spend as much time with family and friends that I've traveled to see as I possibly can. So I said, well, let's make that flight late in the day. And then sure enough, boy, that one gets delayed, your connection gets delayed, and you may or may not get home.
While we're sitting here, I pulled up a little statistic to share with you here. On flights that depart before 6:30 in the morning, 93% of them depart within 15 minutes of their scheduled departure time. 93%. On flights that depart after 4:30 in the afternoon, only 69% of those flights depart within. So you can see the huge difference between taking a flight in the morning. People on the West Coast always complain because, you know, we have to get up and haul our rear ends out to the airport to catch a flight at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, which means getting up in the middle of the night. But the advantage is that that plane's already on the ground from the night before, and if it isn't, you can find that out from the airline sometimes before you even get out of bed in the morning.
A mathematical equation, my friend. What do you say? You got some travel news for us?
I do.
Okay, we are the Travel Guys here on KFBK every Sunday at 3 o'clock, and one of the things we do early on in the show is the travel news. Huey Lewis in the news. By the way, Huey will be playing at Thunder Valley on the in July 31st. We'll have to show up and do our travel news on stage. In the meantime,
hey, I have a plan, too. Before we get to the travel news here, we'll talk about this maybe next week, but I think that the Travel Guys should take a listener trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. I really think that you being you're an old rock and roll guy, you know. And,
with the emphasis on old?
No, I mean, anything rock and roll is old now because it's a genre that's kind of been bypassed. But anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Put that on the back burner. What do you got for us in the travel news today?
All righty here. The Atlantic City Council is kind of up in arms because people won't call their airport by the right name. The Atlanta airport is officially known as the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, but people frequently refer to it as just Hartsfield or Atlanta Hartsfield. Media does that, etc. The name change was to honor a former mayor in Atlanta, Maynard Jackson, who served several terms from the 70s into the 90s. And so the Atlanta City Council now wants everyone to know that if you're referring to their airport, that they are Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta. Beloved Delta Queen sail again. We talked about this in the headlines, and it looks like it is a possibility. A company in Delaware has purchased the name Delta Queen, and it is purchasing the ship and they're going to try to get it back on the water. The Delta Queen has been headquartered in Chattanooga for a number of years since it stopped plying the waters of the Mississippi River. It lost its exemption in 2008 to sail because on the rivers because it's made out of all wood and because of some maritime laws that some folks contend were actually written for ocean-going vessels. It had to have a special exemption from Congress. It lost that exemption, and so therefore it was out of business. But it's possible that the Delta Queen, the sister ship to our own Delta King here mm-hmm. in Sacramento, might be actively out on the Mississippi River sometime in the foreseeable future. So we'll watch that and let you know if anything else happens there. I also mentioned in the headlines that we now have a lake. This is in New Hampshire. That the Federal Aviation Administration has approved Lake Winnipesaukee for plane landings. And indeed, last Saturday, on a lovely day, over 100 private planes landed right on the lake. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you can see a wonderful little video that will show you the ice runway and the gentleman who plows it every day and stuff like that. Is that not cool?
That is cool. Now, you're not talking about pontoon landings, are you?
No, I'm talking about landing on a – this is not a seaplane. This is a regular fixed-wing aircraft landing on ice.
Oh, boy.
On snow and ice.
Okay, that better be really thick snow and ice. That's all I got to say.
All right, a couple of airline notes here. First, these are from United. United has announced that it's going to upgrade its airport lounges. So for those of you who are tired of little pieces of cheese and carrot sticks – United says that they are going to create a new menu focused on freshness, variety, and quality, fresh bagel sticks, hummus with assorted toppings, a Mediterranean salad, cage-free hard-boiled eggs, a soup du jour, in the morning hours, an oatmeal station. Goodness gracious, it sounds so wonderful. I should mention, however, that Delta did all of this about 8 or 9 months ago, so United once again is playing follow the leader. But nonetheless, if you hold a United Club membership, you can expect the cost of membership to be going up soon. They never do things like this when it doesn't hit you in the wallet. And finally, here's another thing from United. You can now redeem miles for cruises. And so Tim Winship, who was a guest of ours on the program a few mm-hmm. months back, did a little thing, and he went through and said, all right, if I was going to get this Royal Caribbean cruise to the Bahamas for 8 days, priced at $1,489, how many miles would it take me, and would it be a good deal? Turned out that the cost would be 175,000 miles, and since we try to get a couple cents a mile when we can for miles when we're redeeming them, this would actually be redeeming your miles at less than a penny a mile. So generally, the word is, if you're buying something other than an airline ticket, unfortunately, with those miles, you're usually not getting a very good rate of return. Update on Wi-Fi from hotels is our last story of the day here, Tom. And just we have posted on travelguysradio.com. There's a wonderful article here that lists how all of the different hotel chains, and everybody's got different rules. If you book it with them or you're high enough up the chain of their frequent guest list or whatever, is where you get free Wi-Fi, and whether it's standard or it's the deluxe or how it all works. Hilton has announced that you have to be a gold or a platinum member with them in order to get free Wi-Fi. But go to travelguysradio.com. We've got a whole list of all the free Wi-Fi, and that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys on KFBK. I have to ask you, Mark, you mentioned lounges at airports.
Yep.
You've probably had a chance to stop into a few along the way, being a frequent flyer that you are. Who has the nicest airport lounges? And most people that fly don't even know that airports have lounges.
I don't get in them too often, Tom, but any international carrier. Get off of the U.S. continent, and you will find that airport lounges are entirely different. Many of them, remember we had the story a couple weeks ago about the guy in China who kept refunding his first-class ticket so he'd get a free meal in the first-class lounge. Indeed, finally, the U.S. carriers are starting to head in that direction, but I guarantee you that they are going to raise the prices significantly when it happens. Delta raised their prices last year, and I'm sure United, the fact that they're saying they're going to upgrade things in the lounge, you'll see a price increase coming next.
Okay, you have a family member, a daughter, a son, maybe thinking of heading to Mexico for spring break. Well, we've got details on how safe or not safe that could be with Ann Banas from Smarter Travel. That's coming up next here on The Travel Guys. Welcome. You've tuned to The Travel Guys on KFBK. I'm Tom Romano along with Mark Hoffman, brought to you by sports leisure vacations. Well, it's that time of the year. It's spring break time, my friends. And I don't know about you, Mark, but when I lived in Modesto, I spring breaked over to the Bay Area.
I spring breaked.
How about you, huh? Did you spring break somewhere?
I really didn't spring break very many places. I kind of was a homebody. I was already in business for myself when I was getting out of high school and stuff like that. So I couldn't really go and leave the business, you know. But lots of kids go to spring break. And one of the big questions, of course, Tom, is where's a safe place to go? You know, you've seen kind of some of the crazy videos and some of the stuff that tends to go on in some of these places. And if you had a 16 or 17 or 18-year-old or 19-year-old kid and they were telling you they're going somewhere for spring break, it would probably scare you half to death in some cases. And I saw this article the other day from our friends at Smarter Travel. And, you know, we have Ed Perkins on the show on a regular basis and some of the other folks who write for Smarter Travel. And I saw this article about, is Mexico safe for spring break? And I immediately thought of the parents out there who listen to our radio program who might like to know some answers about Mexico and some other places. Yep. So we got a hold of the folks at Smarter Travel, and Ann Banas, who is the executive editor of SmarterTravel.com, which you already know is what I consider really truly to be one of the best travel websites for the amateur traveler out there, has joined us on the phone. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, it's great. We're having a wonderful California weekend, and thank you for joining us. So I guess the first question is, the title of the article was, is Mexico safe for spring break? Is it?
Well, that's a great question. And the short answer is it really depends on where you go. You know, Mexico is a very large country. Saying don't go to Mexico because there's gun violence or drug violence is basically the same as saying there's violence in Los Angeles, so don't go to New York. So what you really need to do is break it down by region. And actually, the State Department lists its warning by regions for Mexico, which is very convenient. So you can actually see what places there's a warning for and what places are considered safe. So, for example, if you're thinking about some of the popular tourist areas like Cancun and Cozumel and Riviera Maya, those places are truly places you don't have to worry about. If you're thinking about, you know, Baja or Tijuana, then maybe you might want to rethink that spring break destination.
And I was wondering if you could take a couple of moments and talk about safety tips on spring break, or for that matter, anybody that might be traveling to countries where, you know, there could be some dangers. What kind of tips would you give them?
Right. Well, safety tips are universal, but when you're, you know, thinking about tropical locations, you really want to be smart. If you're headed to the beach, don't bring a wallet full of cash. Lock it up in the safe. Just bring some stuff that you need for the day. Don't travel with a lot of bling. You know, don't wear tons of jewelry. Don't have your expensive iPads and iPhones and you know, electronics with you and showing that on your person and carrying that around when it's obvious, because that's going to attract attention. And you really want to be smart. Again, if we're talking spring break and we're talking students, be careful of alcohol. You know, I know, you know, it's different in other countries. There's often not that age restriction, and it's people like to think they, you know, hey, let's go wild. But you really want to be smart, because you never know, somebody might be spiking a drink, or you might just get in a bad situation where you might not have a really great way out in the moment because you're basically impaired.
Or you might be with a friend who gets in a bad situation. Maybe you can handle your alcohol fine and you're in control
right.
of it, but somebody that you're with in a group and they get mouthy and a situation develops. And yeah, that's really incredible advice there. Also, the article talked a little bit about traveling during the daytime and where you travel.
That's a universally smart tip when you're traveling, especially if you're not somebody who is a seasoned traveler. Really do things during the day. And that's one of the things that the State Department is recommending for Mexico, for some of these areas that are a little, you know, maybe a little sketchy. Use main highways and stick to driving during the day versus driving at night. But that's true, you know, no matter what you're doing, even if you're in cities in Europe and you don't know the area very well, don't go out at night. Or if you do go out at night, make sure you're with a lot of people, you have a plan. One thing that I love to do, especially as a solo woman traveler, is if you are, say, going out for the evening and you take a taxi, ask for that taxi driver's phone number so that you can call him or her on the way back. And I usually get the taxi from the hotel, so it's usually from a reputable, or hopefully from a reputable taxi company. And that's a way to make sure that you have a strategy for getting back to your hotel when you've been out in the evening.
And your article alludes to the fact that in the state of Texas, they recommend you never go to Mexico. What's up with that?
Well, Texas is obviously a border state with Mexico. And, you know, I really think that the reason, and I know the author of this article mentions this, that it's very likely they just want to encourage people to go to their destinations, like Galveston, you know, is a great one for spring break. It's got the beaches, it's got the theme park. You know, San Padre Island is another one that's really popular with spring breakers. So that would definitely be my assessment of why they would be trying to deter people from going to Mexico.
It sounds, I guess, a little bit self-serving, but, you know, there are lots of great places to go within this country. You don't have to really cross the border. And I guess spring, you're not going to go to Canada because it's still a little bit cold. And it strikes me, by the way, our guest is Ann Banas, who is the executive editor of smartertravel.com. We're talking about, is Mexico safe to go on spring break? And really just talking about general rules and stuff. And it strikes me, Ann, that most of what we're talking about, as you mentioned once, these are really common sense things for any traveler in any country. If you were walking down the street in New York City, a lot of these things would apply.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be vigilant and you have to be smart. And the thing is, travel isn't scary. I think for every thousands of things that, or for everything that goes wrong, thousands of things go right, you know? And I think people just need to make sure that they have a plan, that they understand the destination, that they're prepared, that they, you know, have all the information. If they are, say, going to a destination that maybe, you know, has a reputation or is listed on the State Department warnings list, maybe register with the State Department. Make sure your friends and family back home know where you're staying, that you check in with them regularly. Be smart. And then you really, once you put those types of things in place, you're free to really enjoy yourself.
STEP, STEP is the name of the program the State Department has. If you're leaving the country for any reason, you should go to their website and register yourself so that your government, at least, knows where you are. If there's an earthquake, a tornado, a typhoon, who knows what could happen?
Does that include Girls Gone Wild? Would that fall in that category?
That would be. Somehow, Ann, I knew he was going to slip that into this conversation somewhere along the way. Ann Banas,
it goes with spring break.
Yeah, it's kind of the picture that is embedded in every parent's mind, I'm afraid.
Oh, my God.
Ann, thank you so much for your time. We have posted the article we've been talking about at travelguysradio.com. So if you want to get some more of what Ann has been talking about here, is Mexico safe for spring break? And just some general ideas. It sounds like the answer that we're saying is yes, Mexico is safe. If you go to tourist destinations and you're smart and you travel during the daytime and stuff, you should have a wonderful time. Over 150,000 people from the United States cross the border in and out of Mexico every day. So it's a wonderful place to visit, and there are lots of wonderful cultural opportunities there. Ann, thank you so much for your time today.
Great. Thanks for having me, as always.
And thank you, Ann. We are the Travel Guys, and be checking our website, travelguysradio.com, for all the information. And be sure to avoid the video Travel Guys Gone Wild in Mexico as so well. More to come here on the Travel Guys after the news. We're going to tell you about a brand new show on the Travel Channel, Hotel Amazon. Stay with us. On the road again. Tom and Mark here. We're the Travel Guys on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as we've been promising you all week long, we got another special guest on a radio program, another great show that will be premiering on the Travel Channel coming Monday, this Monday, tomorrow, at 10 o'clock at night. It's called Hotel Amazon. Hotel Amazon is a new original docu-series on the Travel Channel. Now, if you enjoy a reality-style TV, you're going to love this. As the cameras follow Rusty and Stefan as they tackle harsh jungle weather, poisonous snakes, and the lack of supplies in order to open their own dream hotel. Rusty Johnson, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Rusty, I think it's important to note that Hotel Amazon is an original reality-style six-hour docu-series. So you're going to want to start at the beginning, starting tomorrow night at 10 on the Travel Channel, and catch them all. Let's start, Rusty, by you telling us a little bit about the show's concept and about your background, if you would.
Yeah, for about the last 25 years, I've trained falcons and eagles and condors and poisonous snakes and alligators, and I go to teach with them at universities and schools throughout the country. And then traveled when I got to the Amazon, going about 15 years ago, I would bring in medicine, shoes, malaria nets to the kids that were living there. And then I was a jungle guide. But when I would bring people down, I'd give them the immersion tour where they would stay actually in the village and kind of really get that true Amazon experience. But then I figured maybe throw up a lodge to where it can get some more people down. Fortunately enough, I met my wife down there, and I bought property from her grandmother. So I had a nice piece of property that was full of jaguars and monkeys and everything you could think of. So I wanted to build it there, but one issue was I didn't want to spend my own money.
Okay.
So the timing was good because my friend Stefan Jablonski ended up winning about $45,000 on the Wheel of Fortune.
Now, Stefan, tell folks a little bit about his background.
Now, Stefan first had a construction background, and then he was a correction officer up in Ulster County, and currently he's a Kingston firefighter and EMT.
Okay, so you've got a good friend who has a little construction background. He's a firefighter from New York, clearly not as into the Amazon and being in the wilderness as you.
No.
So that kind of sets up the scenario of what this program is all about. So go ahead, continue on.
So it's definitely he's a fish out of water in the area. And I think what really sparked some drama in the beginning was I was down there prior working on some of the construction. And then he was coming down to oversee what was done. The expectations that he had were the expectations of what would happen if you were building a place in New York using power tools.
For with that being said, let's play the folks a little snippet. This is a snippet from the very first episode that premieres tomorrow at 10. And you guys are on your way up the Amazon River to take a look at what has been accomplished so far in the construction of Hotel Amazon. So let's take a listen.
The Amazon River is the second longest river in the world. It runs about 4,000 miles and covers 8 countries here in South America.
Yeah, really, the Amazon here, it's just like a crazy dreamland. There's pink dolphins here, eels that shoot electric out of their ears.
This place is just buzzing with life and just nonstop. It's beautiful yet brutal.
So I'm really excited to see how far we've gotten on this. How's the construction going?
You know, busy.
Busy. They are staying busy.
Nothing's easy, but it's coming along.
I can't wait.
I know Stefan's expectations are really high going into this, but, you know, things do not move down here as quickly as they do in New York. So I'm really interested in seeing how he reacts to our progress.
And that kind of sets up where it goes from here. Continue on, Rusty. Where do we go from here?
Downhill. When he finally saw what was accomplished. Now, with my experience being down there, I saw an amazing accomplishment because I know what's entitled to build things down there. And I'm not talking just putting the sticks together, but, you know, having to harvest the materials, having to carry it, having to put it on the boat and ship it, having to lug the lumber through the forest. There's so much details that he wasn't catching on to. So when he showed up, to him, he saw basically nothing getting done. And that probably was our first major clash. But I explained, you know, we're dealing with, you know, handsaws and hammers, and that's it.
And sometimes just the machete.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes just the machete.
I think that one of the things besides the beautiful scenery and the uniqueness of the area in which you're working that makes this series really work is the relationship between you, Rusty, and your good friend, Stefan. You guys, you know, I don't know, when I watch the two of you, you look like people I've seen in movies before, but I can't quite place from where. You're both a very interesting looking guys, handsome men, a lot of personality. The personality just jumps off the screen on this and really makes it come to life. I'm going to have to ask you the backside of this. At what particular point when you got ready to build the hotel and go through this whole process, did the idea of filming it and maybe turning it into a program for the Travel Channel come to light?
Well, I've worked in, you know, here and there in production before doing the hotel. And while I was doing it, I was just kind of talking to people. And while I was, you know, trying to develop some other programs, I said, you know, just to let you know, I am doing this no matter what, whether there's a camera here or not. But I think this is an incredible story. And I think it should be covered. And I actually did have some, you know, networks that did have an interest in it, but really Travel Channel jumped on the idea. They definitely really, really had the most passion about it, and I think understood it as more than any. And also, too, what better place to show, you know, just such a interesting and picturesque and exotic location. Then Travel Channel to do it for you.
I'll tell you.
And, man, they did it good. I mean, they were there morning, noon, and night covering everything that happened. Even when I didn't want them there, they were still there. But you get to see the good, bad, and the ugly for sure.
Well, how did the relationship hold up, Rusty, in the final outcome?
Definitely was a roller coaster. I know on my side, to speak for myself, is that whenever we clashed, the angle that I took about it is I didn't take it personally. Now, see, if Steph and I were just on a backpacking trip, you know, doing something for fun, and all of a sudden we get in these big, brutal fights, that would bother me. But when we have such stress of financial stress, the stress of getting things done, a stress of just everything going on, and we fight, to me, that's just it's a business fight. I don't take it personally. So it's kind of like water off a duck's back. And, you know, some days we definitely want our space from one another. But, you know, in due time, everything gets back to the way it was.
Got to watch this show. I want to ask you, but I'm not going to, and that is, did you get it built? And all those questions that will be answered when you watch all the episodes. Once again, the original docu-series on the Travel Channel is called Hotel Amazon, premiering tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on the Travel Channel. This is one you're going to watch from beginning to end. Don't go Googling it on your computer to try to find out how it turns out ahead of time. Just watch it.
Exactly. You don't want to miss a bit of it, too. You really want to follow it every step of the way. It's an incredible story, and I think everybody's going to enjoy that.
Thanks for spending time with the Travel Guys, Rusty.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, Tom, that sounds like a really you know, a lot of these reality programs come along, and they're a dime a dozen now, so it kind of takes a really unique twist. These guys have a really unique twist, I would say.
Start to finish on this one for sure.
You got it. Yeah, I'm just putting it into my phone right now, a little alarm to set at 9:55 for tomorrow evening so that I will remember. Because, you know, inevitably you think, I want to watch that show. And then at 30 minutes after it starts, you remember.
There
so
you go.
Travel Channel, Monday night, tomorrow night at 10 o'clock for Hotel Amazon. You know, we got to take a break here, Tom. But when we come back, I've been out on the road quite a bit over the last month, and I've had a few really cool things happen to me or that I've witnessed, just little acts of kindness and things that I'd like to give folks a shout out for. So we'll talk about a few of those when we come back.
And we're also going to be, we've been teasing it, we're going to talk about something that occurs on airplanes probably all around you. That
I would say on every flight.
Yeah, pretty much. And apparently the airlines are working on a way to do something about it. Are you curious? Well, stick around. In about 3.5 minutes, you're going to find out as the Travel Guys radio program rolls on.
If you ever plan to motor west,
Travel Guys on KFBK, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, when I traveled recently, I just had to notice, especially when somebody's bag got taken off and put back underneath the plane because it wouldn't fit in what you could call the carry-on, that there's got to be a lot of discrepancy in bag sizes and so forth between airlines. Tell me what you know.
Well, Tom, there is some difference. Of course, it depends on what gate agent you're talking to and what kind of a mood they're in and how nicely you smiled and stuff. I'm going to suggest to you that all those things, because sometimes people get stopped trying to carry that third thing on the plane, and sometimes people come on with looks like a whole household worth of goods onto the plane, and no one says a word to him. Here's something kind of cool, though. Because of the fact that, did you know that sometimes you could take a bag on Southwest Airlines and it might fit in their sizer? You'd go on a United flight the next day and it wouldn't fit in theirs. Why? Because United only allows a 22-inch long bag, and Southwest allows a 24-inch long bag. So our friends at Smarter Travel have created this ultimate guide to carry-on luggage. If you go to travelguysradio.com, we have a link there, and you can find this is for all the domestic U.S. airlines. It tells you not only what carry-on size you can bring and weight. It also has columns to tell you about pets if you want to bring a pet on the plane, medical equipment if you're bringing any kind of special medical equipment on the plane, and infant seats. So this is really a chart that probably has as much good information for people who are carrying stuff on an airplane, everything from pets to kids to medical equipment to regular carry-on bags. Go to travelguysradio.com, and you can see the entire chart. And we'll make it a permanent part of our website because I really think this is one of the best pieces of information that I've seen in a long time.
We've told people that we're going to tell them how you can tell that somebody is annoying American tourists. Are you one of those people? Do you want to be one of those people? You want to avoid being one of those people? Mark has a list. Mark, the list.
A list, yes. Seven signs that you're an annoying American tourist. These are I think these are all pretty much right on. The first on the list is asking people consistently, do you speak English? Can you repeat that in English for me? I don't understand. And, of course, if they don't understand English and you're speaking English and they're just sitting there going, this is another annoying American tourist.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Complaining about portions in restaurants. In the United States, we serve big portions, and especially of proteins. And in other countries, it is very, very common to serve smaller portions, particularly of protein items, meats and cheeses and things of that sort. And so complaining about portions in restaurants is another way to really label yourself as an annoying American tourist. Wearing white sneakers, a fanny pack, a baseball hat, and had a Canadian flag patch sewn onto your backpack, that would be a dead giveaway that you're an annoying American tourist or that you're about to be one.
There you go.
Because you're dressed just like you're going to the beach in your own country. And people in other countries tend to cover up a little bit more than we do in our own country here. So you should know what local customs are. In some countries, like Mexico, bright colors are very much a part of the culture. In some countries, they're not. Next on the list, demanding to know the price in dollars. This is kind of like, can you repeat that in English? The merchant, you're trying to buy something in a street market and you can't figure out exactly how much it is. And you say, well, how much is that in dollars? Expecting that some average citizen in a foreign country is going to be able to immediately whip out a calculator and tell you how much it would be in dollars. So that's an immediate sign. You know those folks who wear the fact that they're from the United States on their sleeve? Or they have a jacket with the American flag or, you know, something. That excessive patriotism, people from other countries don't do that kind of stuff. So that's a way to show people that you're kind of an annoying American tourist, is that you want to show how proud you are to be an American. There are lots of ways to do that that would be just a little bit more subtle. You ever try to find a McDonald's when you're overseas? You know, they're all over the place.
Everybody, or a lot of folks have a tendency to go to foreign countries, and the first thing you start looking for is stuff that's familiar.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to recreate America abroad. If you're going into the hotel lobby and, hey, where's the McDonald's? Where's the Subway? Where's the KFC? You know, live a little bit. Now, this is something I'm not really good at, and that's one reason I don't travel as much internationally, is because I like good old American food. So if you're one of those folks and you're not that adventurous, then stay home. You know, don't go overseas and spend all of your time eating in Subway and McDonald's, because you will have paid an awful lot of money for that. And finally, the last sign that you're an annoying American tourist is when you arrive at the hotel and you have 14 pieces of luggage, 9 pieces of carry-on, 4 shopping bags, 6 children, 3 dogs, and a red wagon. Most Americans terribly overpack when they travel. So keep it down to a minimum. Buy a few things when you're traveling. Leave the American flag jacket at home and buy a new jacket when you're on the road, and you won't look so much like an annoying American tourist. You can go to travelguysradio.com and see that whole list of 7 items there if you would like.
Yeah, and there's the picture of the guy overpacking. It's me.
Yeah.
That's,
hey, Tom, quickly here. Here's the winner for the Sports Leisure Vacations gift card winner. We had for the last couple of weeks, our winners have been calling in. The way this works is we have a $100 gift card for you if you hear your name and call our office. And if nobody calls, it goes up to $200 the next week. It's $100 this week, and our winner is Linda Eastham. Her and her husband, Howard, were on a trip up to the Carson Valley to see eagles and owls a couple of weeks ago with us at Sports Leisure Vacations. So, Linda, if you're listening or one of your friends is listening and tells you that they've heard your name on the radio, give us a call at Sports Leisure Vacations Monday or Tuesday, and we'll send you a $100 gift card.
Okay, before we get to your acts of kindness, let's go ahead and tell people about what we were talking about earlier, or teasing about earlier, and that is what's been going on airplanes. Goes on every flight, probably, that the airlines are going to do something about. And let's try to do it as delicately as we can.
As we can. Most people do this 10 times, on the average, 10 times a day.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you've got 130-something people on an airplane?
Sneezing, and, right?
No.
Hiccups?
No.
It is a bodily function.
Think lower. Think flatulence.
Okay.
A group of medical specialists has provided an answer to a dilemma that has faced flyers since the Wright brothers took to the air back in 1903. Is it better to hold it in or let it go while you're on the aircraft? I suppose is there a better way to say that?
No, I think that's pretty much does it. It's about as good as it's going to get.
I think so. This is the deal. The bottom line is, according to this study that was published in the New Zealand Medical Journal, is that passengers should ignore the social embarrassment of breaking wind and just let it go. It's not healthy to hold that in over a 2 or 3 hour flight, and there's a whole list of reasons here why you shouldn't do that. But interestingly enough, they suggest that, this study suggests that there is a way to combat the smells of flatulence on an airplane, and that is by putting charcoal in the seats.
Okay.
That you could put active charcoal that could be embedded in the seat cushion. Now, I have no idea how flammable active charcoal is and how that would all work with, you know, non-flammable materials on airplanes, but they say that that would be able to neutralize a considerable part of the odor. Of course, that doesn't help if you're sitting in an all-leather seat, I guess. But anyways, the scientists are saying that the best thing to do is, if you have to, is just go ahead and do so.
As I often say, good luck with that. Okay, and now let's move on to our final subject before we wrap it up here in
a couple
of minutes.
Exactly. I just wanted to share a few nice things that had happened with me, to me or around me on the road in the last couple of weeks. The first one was in Houston. You know, Tom, a lot of Marriotts have hotels that are connected to airports around the country, and they tend to be really good hotels. I went into one in Houston. I was wearing my Red Lion hotel jacket. I have a light Red Lion hotel jacket that was given to me a number of years ago. Wear it a lot on the road. Went into the hotel, checked in. The lady noticed the jacket, as sometimes happens. There was a conversation, and she gave me a hard time, and I went up to my room, went out back into the airport to take care of some business, and came back about 30 minutes later, and there was a nice amenity in my room. And there was this little card, and I opened it up, and it said, "Dear Mr. Hoffman, thank you for being so loyal to Marriott, even if you wear other hotels' clothes." And I thought that was really an employee who was smart enough to take advantage of a conversation and make a huge impression. And here I am telling you about it on the radio, so I think it worked.
It did.
I also want to say thank you to the United Airlines employee who a couple weeks ago left a gate upstairs where we had a delayed flight to Denver. A lot of folks were going to misconnect. I had decided I had made other arrangements and was going to go another day. And she went downstairs, got my bag out of luggage, and brought it to me in luggage claim, something that I have rarely seen done and just doesn't happen very often. And I wish that I had gotten that lady's name off of her name badge. So I will just say thank you to the nice United lady who went down and got my suitcase and saved me a couple of hours at the airport a couple of weeks ago. And finally, I wanted to just mention that this is another thing that happened in Houston. There was a lady who was having a terrible time getting across the aisle to the restroom while she was waiting for the aircraft to leave for Sacramento. She got up and started shuffling along, and I was working, saw her out of the corner of my eye, and I see a United flight attendant get up and dash to her side and escort this lady. It must have taken them 5 minutes to walk across the hallway. Fortunately, a female showed up with a wheelchair to assist the lady when they got to the entrance of the restroom. But I thought to myself, you know, almost everybody that's going to ride home with that man just saw him share a wonderful act of kindness with somebody who really needed it. And when that guy got on the airplane, I'm just guessing it, though, the folks that he flew home with looked at him just a little bit better.
Very nice. Great stories. And I know that I hope some of that rubs off on myself and you and all of our listeners as they travel from one place to another.
When you're traveling, good karma, a little good karma can go a long way. So thank you, Tom. I'll see you next week, buddy.
Okay. You have a great week. We are the Travel Guys. We'll be back next Sunday at 3 o'clock and we'll do it again. Have a great week. Be listening to KFBK for Mark's Tip of the Week right here on the radio. In the meantime, have a great one. See you next time.